What if one conversation, one post, or one voice, yours, could actually save a child's life? Today, you're going to hear from a physician who saw the same preventable tragedies over and over in the pediatric ER and decided she wasn't going to stay quiet about it. Dr. Free Hess took what she was seeing on the front lines and brought it directly to the public, educating, advocating, and yes, taking some hits along the way. But here's the part that matters. What she's doing is making a difference, and you can too.
My name is Free Hess. I'm a board-certified pediatrician who's been working in pediatric emergency medicine for 16 years now. Essentially, now I do more proactive and preventative advocacy, education, consulting work, almost all, if not all, based on child safety. Originally, I was in New York City in the Bronx in the pediatric ER. Inner city, it was a tough place, an amazing place. Eventually, we moved to Florida, and I actually initially chose a more rural pediatric ER in Florida. I drove an hour to my shift each way, mainly because it helped me have some more time with my daughter, a little less time working, which was really nice. And here I was thinking, oh, I'm coming from the Bronx, you know, going to a pediatric ER in semi-ruralish Florida. I'm good, right? It's really interesting. I started to see what it was like in areas that didn't have the resources that even inner cities have, and what it's like to not only not have the resources in the community, but especially not have the resources in the hospital. Started to see a lot more preventable injuries and illnesses than I did even in the Bronx, because people just didn't have connections in their community or resources in their community to be educated about it or to seek assistance with it. And I started to get a little bit disillusioned by just constantly having to fix these kids when really the injuries that they were having and the illnesses that they were having just didn't even need to happen in the first place. And realizing that just a little bit of education could have prevented a lot of this.
Yeah, I grew up in a rural area and my mom was a nurse. And so it was an absolute hard no as far as trampolines, any ATV type of things, four-wheelers. And I remember like she was a real buzzkill, you know, because we wanted to do all those things. But as an adult, thank God she didn't let me do those things. You see so many injuries.
Oh, so many. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that I've traumatized my own child to a certain degree with like, guess what I saw tonight? This is why we make the choices that we make in this specific situation, you know, and to kind of put a real story to the situation so that she would understand. But, you know, she was super tiny. I remember she was like a toddlerish, and we went to a park and there was some damn monkey bars. And I'm not exaggerating when she said, uh-oh, he's going to break his radius.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, I might have pushed a little too far occasionally.
My mom was of the opinion there was no safe trampoline.
There is no safe. There's not.
And then ATVs, I think it's the same thing. It seems like they don't realize how dangerous they are.
Yeah. And those are the simple things that sort of frustrated me the most, I think, before I started being so much of an advocate and an educator on this, is because, you know, a child ends up having a severe head trauma from an ATV, and it could have been prevented if they just didn't get on the ATV. And I know kids will be kids, but like, you know, had the parents known that and had the parents educated the kid on it, it was 100% preventable. I was starting to get frustrated that, yes, I did have the ability to educate people in the ER, but it was one person. And I wanted to educate on a larger platform. And so that's why I started the website pdmom.com, which is an educational website. So PD, obviously pediatrician, and mom, because I am a mom, which is my most important job, by the way. I started the podcast, and then I was like, okay, fine, I'll start doing social media. So initially joined Facebook first, got a page, started a private group just for evidence-based child safety, which grew all on its own, which was pretty amazing. And then started doing all other platforms. And even finally, very late, but finally joined TikTok, which I swore I would never do. I was like, why? That's for kids. I'm not going to do it. And funny enough, that's my largest social media platform. Yes, there are lots of kids that follow me, but it's actually mostly parents, adults, other professionals that want to learn. And then that kind of morphed into child safety consulting, where I do webinars, I do consulting with families, with schools, with organizations, with companies, product safety, manufacturing safety. You know, a lot of that goes to safe sleep too. Like that's something that just is so near and dear to my heart because I cannot even explain to you in my career how many infants I have had to code and call time of death on from a very obvious unsafe sleep situation. And it just didn't have to happen.
And that's kind of controversial, right? Because you've got parents, I'm guessing of this is like co-sleeping kind of stuff.
So that's an important distinction. Co-sleeping is more of an umbrella term. So it actually is bed sharing and room sharing. So room sharing with a baby, with an infant in their own safe sleep space, which is still considered co-sleeping, we recommend. Bed sharing, which is also considered co-sleeping, we do not recommend in any way. There is no safe way to bed share. And we're trying in pediatrics, trying really hard to get rid of the term co-sleeping because it does nothing but confuse people. It causes a lot of misinformation. So we should be using those two terms instead of co-sleeping.
So the instruction should be that bed sharing is not mm-hmm. recommended.
Yes.
Room sharing, where the child has its own safe space, separate from where the parent is sleeping, mm-hmm. is a different story.
Yes.
And is recommended because that way you're close, you can keep mm-hmm. an eye on things.
There's some data that shows it decreases the incidence of SIDS, a lot of it just because you can hear the child. And there's also a lot of confusion and misinformation about SIDS versus death from bed sharing and what that means and what it doesn't mean as well. But I think all of that misunderstanding and the terms and the usage, and also just it's a very emotional topic, is what makes it quote unquote controversial. But it's actually shouldn't be controversial. I understand the need and want to be very close to your child. You know, I was there, but the risks just don't outweigh the benefits. But it's a very emotional topic. So it's actually probably one of the topics that I get the most hate for on social media, second only to vaccines. So,
is some hate because they don't understand what you're saying?
No, I am very careful to make it very clear. And I also like painstakingly sometimes in comments will actually correct the terminology so that everybody is on the same page. It just truly is the fact that there's a large amount of people that think the data is either wrong, the evidence that we have is wrong, or that there's an ulterior motive for me to not want people to bed share, which I can't understand what they would think that would be because, you know, like they'll say, you don't want babies to bond with their mothers. Well, of course I do, but you can't bond with your infant if they're not alive.
Right.
I think it just because it's such an emotional thing and people feel like, well, we've done it forever. And, you know, my parents did it with me and I'm fine. And my grandparents and all of this. Well, that's because the people who were not fine aren't here to talk about it. Right.
Right.
So what's been helpful in that space, and this is some of the beauty of becoming an advocate, is I've had the wonderful opportunity of becoming close friends with and working with various other advocates in different areas of child safety. One of the moderators of my safety group is a woman named Shayna, whose daughter Claire died from unsafe sleep in an in-home daycare. And that's helping because I'm up there as the physician saying, you know, this is not safe. You shouldn't do it. It's easy to tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a little harder to tell the parent who did have a child who passed away from this. And as a matter of fact, I've also worked with a young mother who does a lot of advocacy on social media who chose to bed share. She did it with four children, her fifth child, passed away from the same thing that her four previous children did not. And she gets out there. And I think in general, people tend to give her less hate and attacks than I get, but people will still do it to her. Well, you did it wrong. You didn't do it the safe way. Or right. You must have been high. You must have been drinking alcohol. You must have been this.
I guess it's that confirmation bias where you're looking for anything to justify what you want to do and you refuse to acknowledge any evidence to the contrary.
Because it would be super hard to understand and give empathy to this mother and say that she is right in getting out there and being an advocate because it is a dangerous situation and then choose to still do it yourself. I just kind of started out with hoping that I would help educate the masses and let me put myself where they are. And then all this other stuff kind of came together. I started speaking all over the country, mostly at AAP conferences, but also like state AAP conferences, child advocacy centers, and now looking to start doing some in law enforcement, specifically to child safety online, because that's a lot of what I cover as well. I did a few documentaries, mostly on child safety online and child predators, sextortion, that kind of stuff. And that's what I mean about branching out. Once I started doing this, so many things popped up that I did not even think was going to become a thing. Like, that wasn't the plan. To be quite honest, one of the biggest things that I think physicians need to be doing is to get on social media. I know so many people are going to hate to hear that, but that is where people are getting their information. That's where they're getting their education. And that's where they're actually even getting their second opinions when they don't like what their physician said. So if you have a whole host of pediatricians that are out on social media and they're all saying the same thing, that's very helpful. And it's helping to drown out the misinformation that's there. And then they're saying, okay, maybe my pediatrician was right. And all these influencers out there that are saying something different are not right, you know?
So more physicians need to be on social media sharing the knowledge that they have and amplifying each other's messages as well.
100%. Amplifying each other's messages is a huge thing too. So yes, we all have to be out there. But everybody needs to be sharing everything and just spread it. It has to be everybody working together because there's too much to do out there. There's too much misinformation. There's too many questions that people have to just do it one-on-one.
What advice do you have for a doctor who wants to start doing that but isn't sure how or what the first step would be? And also, how can they overcome the concern about criticism?
Yeah. So honestly, best advice, although nobody loves to hear this, is just get on and do it. You don't wait until you have what you are going to say perfect. You don't have to look perfect. Like some of my videos I'm doing just sitting on the couch with poor lighting, right? Like I had this thought. I need to tell you this thought now. Let's just go. And to be quite honest, most people relate to that better than somebody getting up in their white coat, stethoscope around their neck, and like, okay, let's talk about such and such. Because they can't relate to that as well. You know, I'll come home and be like, oh my gosh, my daughter and I were at the store today. This is what happened. I thought it would be a good thing to talk to you about. Just start doing it. And you get more and more comfortable. The first bunch of times are going to be super awkward. You're going to feel, oh my God, did I say that right? Did I sound stupid? Did I look terrible? You're going to go through all of that stuff. But just do it and you get used to it. And it actually, for a lot of people, will start to be really fun. And I know it's not for everybody and that's okay. And for the people who don't like doing videos, for example, then you go ahead and you do just photos and text posts, something. I've taken big chunks of time where I didn't do any new videos and have only done text ones because I just needed a break. Because social media can wear you down. And that's the second part of what you said is like to take the criticism. That's just something that will come with the knowledge that even if you feel like you're confident, you got your stuff together, you can take it. You know, you've been there, done that. Nothing that they can say is going to break me down. It will. At some point, you'll be getting DMs about how horrible you are, especially if you're going to talk about vaccines. That's like a big one. You know, like I've had fake pages made of me and, you know, all just so much stuff. And so you're going to get that. You'll get kind of like what medicine does to you in general. It hardens you up a little bit in certain ways. It will harden you up a little bit, but there will be times where you're like, nope, that's it. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. But the benefits outweigh that, in my personal opinion. Now, that might not be true for everybody. But again, you can do it in different ways. You figure out which way works best for you. And even at the very least, if you just don't ever want to be the person posting anything, at least amplify other people who are, right? Like there's going to be people that just, it's not for them. And I respect that. But there's no reason you shouldn't be out there amplifying it. And you can actually even make a professional account, right? And then just have it be everybody else's stuff that you share. Even that can help.
I think that is one thing that everyone can do is follow other physicians that are out there, content creators that you know and trust, that you know are giving good information and just sharing that information. In fact, today you shared a post that I thought was really fascinating, breaking down some political discussion, saying that we need more young moms and that teenage pregnancy. Describe the post because it was like pretty shocking.
Totally shocking, yes. So there is a medical analyst, I think is what they call him on Fox News. He is a physician, actually. He's an internist. And he got up on there and he had said that we're having decline in births, right, in this country, which we are. And he broke that down by age. And they actually showed a graph as well. And the main part was the 15 to 19-year-olds. And that's the part that he spoke about the most and said, they're not having enough babies because we are telling them that they should wait until they're older and are more financially stable. And of course.
Because there's data that it's better for the child if they're being raised by someone that is ready to have them, for one. And for two, the outcomes on the mother in particular are really negative if they have a baby when they're too young.
Yeah. And I mean, so much information we have on this and what we know. And then on top of that, it's so hypocritical to say that's what we, quote unquote, need, but then not have anything there to assist when that happens. So then we have these teenagers who end up being single parents sometimes, or even if they're not single parents and they're together, not old enough to even have a job. A 15-year-old in many states can't even drive yet. How are they going to get to a job? How are they going to get to school on their own? And what if they don't have their parents with them to help them? I could go on and on.
It's like living in the upside down world. Like, I remember a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that we were working real hard to lower our teenage pregnancy rates because we knew that it was not great for the mother or the child. And now, all of a sudden, we're actually extolling the virtues of, you know, basically child mothers. That is blowing my mind.
Oh, mine too. And that's why I had to do the post, because I was so angry when I heard that. And it's so backwards and self-serving.
And I think what it leads me into is a very dark place, which is this insane amount of child pornography, pedophilia. I just saw there was testimony from, I forget, he was a football player, and he was testifying in front of Congress showing a map and said in all these places where there's a dot, there's child pornography being disseminated. And it was like,
Tim Tebow.
First of all, I was absolutely horrified because the more you learn about this, the more it's just hard to believe. But I was also saying, thank God that somebody that is, I think, of influence that people will listen to, a football player, is talking about this, but we should all be talking about this.
Yeah. Well, and that's also part of what you can do with advocacy that a lot of people don't understand is, especially as a physician, it puts you in a place to where you can reach out to people like Tim Tebow. So you can reach out to the media. For example, I participated in a documentary with the BBC who flew here. It's Childhood 2.0. It's all about the dangers of social media. Now, had I not been on social media and doing what I'm doing, I would not have had done it. And I was able to meet the other experts that were in it, the parents, the kids that were in it. And it's all like just the trunk of the tree and the branches and now the leaves, and everybody, like everybody's able to work together. And if you're out on social media, you can reach those people. And the more that physicians are doing this too, then the more we can start to reach out with other people who do have a lot more influence than we do, because we're pretty low on the totem pole of social media influence, you know? But if I was able to reach out to Tim Tebow and talk to him about this, and you just start having different people start to pair up, and then it increases the likelihood that somebody's going to hear about this topic, right?
Well, I hate to ask, even ask this question, but why is this issue so prevalent with child pornography and pedophilia? And I'm guessing it's just always been there. And I know incest and is it just now we're opening our eyes to it? Has social media and, you know, the ability to forward this stuff digitally exploded it?
I think it's always been there to as much of a degree as it could be. Let's just start at the basics of just sexual abuse, right? 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys over a lifetime before they're 18. 90% to 93% of those children know their abuser. So it's somebody close. And 34% of that 90% to 93% are family. And so this has always been happening. It's just that we didn't know about it or didn't hear about it because social media wasn't really a thing. So now we took something that was always happening and then added social media that allowed a lot of those same people to now have access to a lot more targets. Predators now have the world, right? Now they have everything. Then we added technology to that, not just the ability to message people, but now we have even more things that make it even easier. So most of my talks, especially with AAP, are surrounding like sextortion, both for additional CSAM material, but sextortion also for financial gain. So now the technology has changed the game to where now you have multiple reasons people are doing it, not just the child pornography for their own satisfaction, but also getting child pornography to sell to make money, or to bribe the person who sent it to get money.
Sextortion is, define that for the audience.
So sextortion is when the online predator seeks out a target and asks them for something and then threatens them as a result. And so the most common right now is financial sextortion, specifically to teen boys is the highest number and the rising number. It happens to teen girls and young kids even, and even adults, but it's mostly teen boys. And somebody will contact them on social media and start a conversation and then oftentimes provide a nude to them. Sometimes we'll just ask, but either way, convince them to then send a nude of themselves. And as soon as they get that nude, they say, if you don't give me this amount of money, I am going to blast this out on social media. And because social media is the way it is, this predator knows what school they go to. They have their friends list. They know who their parents are. And so the kid freaks out, rightfully so, understandably. I usually will tell several stories in each one of my talks when I go to these conferences, and it very often leads to suicide. So first contact to suicide has happened in some cases in as quickly as 2 hours. And most often at night when parents are sleeping, so there is no time to intervene. And now we have AI, which makes it even worse because now the kid, the target, doesn't even have to provide the photo. The predator can just create a photo. And even though that child will understand, obviously, that's not a photo of me because I did not send that photo to somebody, the fear of having that get sent out and having other people think that it is them is enough. We know that it has severe psychological effects on these kids. Severe.
What's the advice that you give to help protect kids?
So definitely we need more parents and pediatricians and community members, just adults in general, to learn more about this, because this is one of the very few times that there has been and will be a very large generational gap in the understanding of social media and online. Like, we do not know nearly as much as our children do. And so it's hard to do that catch-up game where you're learning about this stuff, but you have to. And so that's why I educate about it, because you can't talk to your kids about something that you don't even know exists, right? So just as an example, I got a DM once from a mother who says, I've been trying to figure out how I would message you and what I would say for a year now. And so she said in this message, she said that she had seen a social media post of mine about sextortion. She had not heard about it. She did not know what it was. She went and spoke to her son about it, had him look through some of my stuff as well. He was 15 at the time. And then she said 6 months later, she got a phone call from Department of Homeland Security saying that they had gotten a report from her son that he was a victim of sextortion, and that with his help and his information, they were able to find the people and arrested them. And this officer had said to her that in her 10 plus years of doing this, she had never had a victim be the one to report. And so even though the child did not feel comfortable telling the mom, which is what she had said, she's like, obviously, I'd love for you to tell me, but if you don't feel comfortable telling me, tell somebody. Tell somebody. And that's what he did. He didn't tell her. He did now, obviously, after that phone call, they were able to discuss it. In the end of it, and I don't say this to boast, but this is literally why I do it. In the end of it, she's like, I just need to say thank you, because you could have saved his life, because he might have been one of those kids who died by suicide as a result. And he didn't. And it just took one video. This is why I tell people, just get out there and do it, whether you're comfortable or not comfortable. She saw one video that caused her to have one conversation that ended up like this.
That's what this whole podcast is about, showing what physicians can do and how powerful our voices can be, and how it doesn't necessarily take something huge. But yep, we do have to find our calling, what we're passionate about. Yep. For you, it's child safety. And I'm getting more and more, especially as I learn about this stuff. But sometimes it's also when your eyes are open to something, you can't unsee it. And that's, mm-hmm, I think, a calling. And when you see something, you have to share and tell others. So you find your passion, and then you just start speaking out about it in any way that you can. And know that the more of us that do that, that is how we change the world for better.
Yeah. I have a section on my phone that says like parent thank yous. And it's not even really always a thank you. It's just like a positive thing that they mention. And it's, I save it, obviously, first and foremost, when things get bad or I'm getting hammered on social media, I will open it up and be like, this is why. Just remember this. But also because I would love even for other physicians to see, like even from that post today, I already got an email. I got an email from a mother who told me about her teen daughter's sexual assault, but she ended up getting pregnant and she actually wanted me to post it. She wanted people to hear it because she's like, this happens to real people. And I want people to know it happens to real people. And so this is the impact that we can have. And to be quite honest, you're in a lot of the same groups that I'm in, right? And we see and hear just how exhausted and beat down so many physicians are with the system and also with fighting misinformation and all of this stuff. And sometimes getting out there and doing this one video and you get a couple of posts that are like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this. Thank you so much. That can just be that little bit that's like, okay, I can do this some more. Like, I can do it. I can do it. And I will sometimes even respond to people if they say something like that. I'll say, you have no idea how much I needed to hear this today. Thank you. This is what's going to make me redo this tomorrow. Because sometimes you need that. And I think as physicians, we get hammered so much in the traditional way that we are taught to do things that stepping out the box and doing things in a little bit of a different way can just bring a breath of fresh air and just get you moving again. I do want to say one other thing, though, that I actually think would be important for physicians who are considering getting online is to never hesitate reaching out to other people who have been online for quite a time when and if something happens, right? So you get hammered on a post and you're just not sure, how do I handle this? Reach out. There's so many of us, like I've done it, where I've reached out to other people. People have reached out to me, because knowing that you have that backup, somebody who is going to be willing to talk to you, or if you think this is not for me, I did a vaccine post and I am getting killed. Do I turn the comments off? Do I just block? Like, what do I do? Do I do a repeat video or post after? All of these things. Reach out to somebody. I've never, ever met or have heard of any physician online that does social media education that is not willing to talk to another person about how to approach something, or even sometimes just to pick them up when they're feeling down, like I don't know if I can keep doing this. This is really hard. Just getting that little pep talk from somebody who has also had a pep talk from somebody else who has had a pep talk from somebody else, that can be very, very helpful. I think knowing that you should do that and that you can do that will help more people take the plunge onto social media.
I think that's really good advice. Sometimes I get discouraged reading comments that not even something that I posted, just I dare to take a look at like a news article talking about vaccinations or something. And I just, oh, let's see what people say. And then it's, you know, I have to tell myself, like, okay, maybe that person's a bot. You know, I try to give myself like some of that. And then I look, okay, there's somebody that's, you know, a voice of reason. But yeah, it can be really hard to look at those comments. You kind of want to get a feel for what people are saying, but it could also lead you down a very negative
path. Oh, for sure. And I think one of people's biggest fears is that when and if something goes viral unexpectedly, that can be an amazing thing for education. On the flip side, it can be a really, really horrific thing for just being fearful of what could happen. And that does and can happen. It's happened to a friend of mine about vaccine posts. She actually was all over the news for it because it got so bad for her. At one point, I had it when another physician mom told me about something that was on YouTube Kids that shouldn't have been there. And I reported it and it went worldwide viral and I was getting threats and, you know, all of this stuff. And that's when I reached out to people who had been there and who had done it. And that was very helpful. And I think just understanding that that can happen, but that there are ways and people to help you through it. And that even with that happening, the benefit and the messages you'll get from people saying that you've changed their mind or you saved their kid, or, you know, I've learned something and now I'm going to change the way I'm going to do things with my kid, which makes them safer. Like, all of those things are just so much worth it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Physicians Taking Back Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, bringing you true stories of day-to-day physicians just like you who are working to improve the healthcare system. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on the next episode.